it sounds nice in a make-believe story, but how you actually get human beings to live in something like that, you know, that's kind of the fallacy of Marxism, where everyone isn't greedy. You get what you need to survive and not, no more, and you spread it around. But people are always greedy. They're always looking for more.
Well, you know, universal basic income today, right now, here in the present moment, that's what my life is. And I tell you, I don't complain, and I feel really good, and I'm happy. I tell you, you know, without, what's the word? I know what I want, so I can get it, and there's more of it around, and, you know, I love my ham radio hobby, my very simple radio, my simple antenna, and I don't know what else there is to say.
Well, there's a whole bunch of people out there with far more money than they need for their entire lifetime and their children's lifetime, and yet they want more. As good old Elon. He's evidently circling to become one of the first trillionaires, but you think that that's going to make him stop? He'll be figuring out schemes where he can be worth $2 trillion, $4 trillion, or $8 trillion. There's never an end. It's a black hole in their very core that, although they keep trying to fill, is always empty.
Well, I say the key to a good life is happiness. You know, I have very minimal amounts of money, and even so, I was still able to buy a Yaesu FTDX10 radio for some reasonable amount of money, but more than like a beginner's radio. I say, you know, I'm really happy. I can't complain for that.
Comment.
Comment.
Hi, good evening. This is Brian. I want to say good evening to everyone. And, I just wanted to just say, you know, in my opinion, one of the ways to a happy life is basically as least stress as possible. And however that's accomplished, I think that's achieved.
Okay. Again, I think it depends on the individual. Some people use stress effectively as a way of egging them on to what they want to accomplish. So, you know, sometimes stress can be useful. Sometimes the abject lack of any stress can lead some people to a somewhat unmotivated, unproductive life.
It's possible. I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I'm just saying, you know, for me, you know, if all stress was taken away, that would be equal to a lot of money. A lot.
Okay. There's all kinds of interesting psychological theories that suggest that, you know, some people are kind of preset, you know. They are at approximately a certain level of happiness. If you made their lives more problematic, they would kind of reset and assume the same degree of happiness. If you gave them $1 billion, they might go crazy for a little while, but eventually they settle back to the same kind of level of happiness. You know, although we kind of connect the circumstances to how happy or unhappy we are, there's probably some biological aspect that predetermines the range of our happiness and unhappiness. I mean, there are people that I don't understand. You know, they have money, they have fame, they have friends, they have loves, and they're depressed, and they're terribly unhappy. And, you know, and other people who have awful existences. I mean, look at some third world countries. Look at the way a lot of people live in the Philippines, where, you know, they don't even have a decent roof on their house. When it rains through. And yet they survive, they don't complain, and, I think it's an internal phenomenon much more than an external one.
Could be. I mean, certainly people who live a very quiet life and have good, some social interactions with their family or even closer social interactions usually tend to go ahead and live more, longer, and diet, and a whole bunch of things that go into it. It's rather complex.
Yeah, life generally is complex.
Well, you know, I have to say, there are these spiritual groups where people learn how to lose their stress. They meditate, they do yoga, they eat right, and they do breathing practices. I think all of this is valuable. And if you take a number of those courses, get to a certain point where you don't want to take any more courses, and you find that you've reached a certain level of calm and happiness.
Okay, different strokes for different folks. Some of this stuff is grifting. You can sort of tell because the people who run some of these things are grifters, and, you know, they kind of ultimately kind of fall apart toward the end, and, you know, they basically are stealing everything from everyone. So, you know, sometimes psychosomatic things make people feel better. So there's nothing particularly wrong as long as you don't stop doing the things that you know, keep you healthy in the first place. But you know, it depends. But again, like everything, life is complicated.
Question.
Yeah, right.
I have a relative before he passed, had developed colitis shortly after he got married because he served in the Korean War. Is it possible that stress could trigger something like that?
Yeah, yeah. The GI tract is very sensitive to nerve signals that pass by through and around it. So yeah, a lot of times people with types of colitis can have flare ups when they get emotionally stressed.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry,
you shouldn't have US.
Yeah, Paul.
About the GI tract, there's a drug that just came out, and I wonder if you've heard of this thing. Oh, I can't pronounce it, but it's supposed to be a very important drug to fight pancreatic, Exxon, Razzabin, some name like that. Anyway, it's a drug by Revolution Medicines, which would be game-changing, you know, if it's true. Just saw that in the news anyway today. Back to you.
Well, I mean, there's always a lot of experimental drugs available. Unfortunately, a large percentage of them don't have had through the research well and retired, but I don't know. I don't think there's any preventive medication against pancreatic cancer. There might be medication that specifically benefit people suffering from pancreatic cancer, but I don't think there's a counter-agent, because it's just it's not that nice and clean and clear. It's primarily mutagenic changes in DNA of different organ structures that lose the ability to kind of maintain stasis with attached cells, and they just overgrow. But I'll take a look.
A pill, some kind of a pill. It's not even an injection or anything like that. So that, I mean, it sounds good, and I just wonder if it's something to do with the stock market. You know, they're going to wind up, you know, doubling their value. That's true. Sure.
Paul?
Hello. I heard somebody call me. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Brian. The name of the medication is called the little one. It's called Darox. Daroxonrasib. So I say Daroxon. Something like that. I'm bad at that. But what I'm looking at it right now, the story is very interesting, but basically it just doubles your time to live. That's about it.
Well, that's good. Very good. Yeah, I was going to spell it for Roy, too. I can't pronounce it. They need another name. They need it, you know, fancy name. Cancer killer or something. Anyway, back to your work.
KG2RY.
Yeah, David?
Yeah. They were saying something. I read some articles about it. By 2030, the year 2030, man will have somewhat or completely discovered physical immortality.
I wouldn't bet on it, any amount.
And take those other pills and get twice as much.
Yeah, it's just a modified molecule that improves the ability of getting chemotherapy to the cell site. It's not a magic thing, and it's not prophylactic. You'd only use this up if you were already on chemotherapy for pancreatic cancer.
You know, Elon Musk was talking about embedding the chip inside the person's brain to give them superpower.
Yeah, well, we sort of talked about how Elon is full of feces.
Well, you know, I don't know if I would trust it, but this is just a piece of news.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust it. Basically, he took technology that was already developed in a university lab. He basically bought off the undergrad students who were working for this professor, who was very angry about it, and did his implant thing, killed a whole bunch of animals with it. I think he conned some guy into letting them do brain surgery on him and implant the chip, and I haven't heard a word from them in at least 2 years. And you know, if Elon gets anything that he could popularize, he will, though it must be that he's burying people in the backyard or something. Equally unfortunate. It's Neuralink. No one even mentions Neuralink anymore. When Elon was playing musical chairs with SpaceX, where SpaceX is buying X, and X is buying XAI, and this is buying that, and that buying the other, Neuralink, no one mentions anymore. It's like they made it disappear.
Well, you know, I was reading an article where they confirmed that the robo taxi, is a car that drives without a driver, is a complete failure. And they said that even his own people who engineered it, you know, said that it was faulty.
Well, yeah, and unfortunately for a whole bunch of reasons. You need more sensors. But sensors cost money, and he didn't want to pay for the sensors. So he discontinued everything but video cameras. And without the proper amount of sensors, it's very difficult to design an autopiloting car. Waymo has all the expensive LiDAR, Zono equipment and such, and it's not even perfect. But at least there are different classifications. And there's a reason why the Tesla cars are worthless. It's generally known that it's a Class 2 auto-driving device, where Waymo is a Class 4. So it's inherently less useful. And they're having terrible tests in Austin. I think they had one entire car out there, and it has more accidents than human beings do. So it's a complete disaster. It's a flimflam.
Well, you know, it was a while ago, I remember when Elon's cars and those cars were very successful. And I think there was another one somewhere. I don't remember where it was. But the only ones I got concerned with, yeah, Bezos cars, I don't remember what it's called.
Bezos, I think they might have had a program, but I don't think they ever showed any cars.
It was these, like a two-seater car. It's in it designed for a taxi only, and only to be used within certain cities.
Okay, I missed that entirely. I mean, there are a couple of companies that are interested in taxi services. There's all kinds of risen problems. Waymo, I think, is ultimately owned by Google, which has a lot of money to waste if they're so inclined. And they seem to be the front company in the industry. Whether it becomes worth the trouble depends upon, you know, how inexpensively they can do it and how they're going to deal with insurance and others, I think. Still experimental. Tesla is worthless. The whole idea that, you know, he had to get the autopilot done because otherwise the company would probably collapse in on itself. You know, it might be motivation, but if you're not willing to put the right sensors in, and if you're more than willing to over-promote something, then you're not going to get what you look for. So I doubt, you know, I don't know what's going to become of Tesla. I assume that if Elon's ever able to hype his SpaceX to trillions of dollars, he'll just absorb it into SpaceX, and, you know, Tesla will be a subdivision, and then you won't hear anything about it ever again, and he'll move on to some other absurd technology that's not going to work.
Well, you know, if they ask me, you know, I would tell them not to bother. I'm so happy with an Uber service. Uber service is quite good, I think.
Yeah, but unfortunately, techros don't really like human beings. They would like to take them out of the equation. You know, you take someone like Jeff Bezos, and he doesn't like human beings. They want to have lunch breaks. They want to go to the bathroom. All kinds of things he thinks he could engineer out. So a lot of these guys they have hundreds of billions of dollars. They don't need another dollar. And yet, they will do everything in their power to screw up people just kind of getting through the day, fire their asses, and for the sake of the chance of making a few billion more. So that's the way it is. All these AI promotions ultimately at the very surface are you can fire all your nasty, annoying human employees and just have everything run on autopilot, and, you know, your AI agent can simply phone you on your cell phone to tweak the adjustment on the setting of your automated factories and not have to deal with another human being again. So this is what they're looking for, and this is what they're being promised. I don't think they're going to get it, but that's a major promise of the brave new world that is artificial intelligence these days.
I don't want to work for them. I'd rather have less money.
Well, unfortunately, you know, working at a Amazon warehouse is not a lucrative field. You're not going to be filthy rich. You'll be able to pay your bills and your rent and other such things and little else. So, you know, you're fortunate in that you're born at a certain time where economics was such that you could find a comfortable niche for yourself. But, you know, we've talked about it before. The young people, it's a scary place. People are threatening that artificial intelligence is going to do away with entry-level jobs for human beings. So there are people coming out of college with ridiculous amounts of debt because they take student loans, and no one is picking up their CV and no one offering them entry-level jobs. And They live isolated lives where they communicate with people like themselves over computers instead of in person. So it's a sad existence.
I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure you heard of it, but then again, you may not have, because there's so much going on you could miss it. I remember I seen there was a big lawsuit with the Tesla owners fought against Tesla because of the promise of self-driving, and they said that's why we bought it, and it never came to fruition. I think there's some sort of promise we bought it, there was going to be sort of upgrade, and it never came about. So what? It's a big lawsuit, and from the little that I've read, it sounds like a lot of trouble coming that way.
Yeah,
W1WR.
Yeah.
Good evening, everyone. W1WR, Rob over here in Greenwich, Connecticut, across the pond. Well, my mother said this years ago before she passed away, and I see it now. The youth of this generation is looking for their college tuition to be paid for. They don't want to pay it back, and not living within their means. My mother said when my father, and they didn't have a brand new car. They saved up to buy a house. They didn't have everything brand new. The society of the young people now, they got to have a new car every 3 years. They're leasing it. They have to have the newest cell phone every 2 years, and the newest, the fanciest shoes and socks. I mean, everything. And they're all moving back in with their parents there, moving in their basements there. So, you know, you got to live within your means there. And I know a lot of young children that do. They, you know, they sacrifice, they scrimp and save to get a house. But it seems just like, you know, the future of the youth there is that, you know, they just want to spend.
Well, I mean, part of that is the way that they were brought up. They were spoiled because their parents had a better life than their grandparents, and their parents had the means to spoil them without the wisdom of knowing the consequences. But even despite that, the price of college education has skyrocketed, and the availability of entry-level jobs is awful. So even if you say they're shekels and what have you, these are particularly tough times. You know, I mean, are they as tough as our grandparents had, great-grandparents had during the Depression? No. But, you know, give this administration another year or two and see if they can kind of mimic that. It's just, these are not happy-go-lucky times for young people. They have a lot of concerns about their future. And are some of them spoiled rotten? Yeah, unfortunately. That's what parents unfortunately do if given the opportunity. But there are other things in play as well, where you can't just kind of, save a couple of pennies here and there and put together enough to pay off your college loans in under 20 years. You know, we're living in a time where the average person buying their first house has gone up from 30 years of age to 40 years of age.
Yeah, everything has gone up too. But look at it, they took all trades out of school there, and schools were, you know, focusing on, you've got to go to college, you've got to go to college. No, you're not going to become a carpenter or stuff like that. Even the parents, my kid's not going to go do that in landscaping or hammer and nail or become a plumber. Look at all the trades now, and who is going to end up cutting your grass now? And I'm not being political or against, you know, other, you know, cultures and stuff like that, but I've seen it here. Well, Greenwich is a money town. Oh, my son's doing it. And a lot of these kids that went to college, they didn't even go to the study that they studied for college, and they're working someplace else in a supermarket and stuff like that. So they're not even, you know, using their college education that they went for and getting into that there. So, like I said, I see what goes on here in the spending of it. You know, if you did, you know, didn't spend all that, you may have a chance to do that. But like I said, you know, and this has been on the state of Connecticut and the boards and everything. Wait a minute, I went to school, I paid for my college, I washed dishes or attended bar or I did side jobs there. But like you said, the generation that these kids were brought is a lot to do with the parents, is spoiling them. My father said to my mother, I'm 70 years old, back when I was younger, my father said to my mother, I think Rob is spoiled. My mother says, no, all kids smell that way.
Yeah, like most things, it's a complicated thing. You can't kind of distill it down to you know, all these kids are spoiled. We're living in an unfortunate economic environment the disparity between wealthy and poor has not probably been this wide in the 1800s, and it's going in the wrong direction. And you know, eventually it'll snap back because as the nature of human beings, they tolerate nonsense until they can't tolerate it, and you know, then they do something about it. But you know, it's a complex situation. It's partly the fault of the youngsters, it's partly the fault of the parents, it's partly the fault of the economists and politicians and government wanks who had delusions of grandeur that they actually understood their field more than they did. But, you know, that's just what happened, unfortunately. But it's not a good thing to watch. You know, the isolation and the loneliness of the average young person is a terrible thing to watch.
Comment.
Yes, Brian?
Since the advent of that and later on the smartphone, these wonderful inventions that were really in terms of social controls. And it's very, very difficult to do that. But from what I see, okay, from when I was younger, what I see now is that kids socialize electronically. They do not really talk to one another. It's completely different now, raising basically a bunch of robots in a kind of way.
Well, I wouldn't want to call them robots, but socially awkward human beings. This is endemic to the entire generation, unfortunately. And I don't see it changing any in the short term. I mean, there's interesting kind of behavioral flip-flops between generations. So probably if we survive, the next generation after the youngsters we have now as a reaction to their social isolation may very well possibly be very social, gregarious, behavioral types. You kind of see that with communications in general. The kind of epitome of a conversational history back in the turn of the 20th century was people wrote beautiful prose in letters because letters was the means of communication. And later on, phone calls were, and so those prose kind of took a hit on the efficiency of communicating via phone. And then we have our present texting society, where things are kind of squeezed together and abbreviated and not terribly aesthetically pleasing, because the present generation transmits ideas and such through text messages. Who knows what the next way of conveying information technologically will be in the 10, 20, 30 years, and that'll shift the skill sets of that generation.
PhD.
Yes, Jim?
I have some thoughts on the topic. To accomplish any particular thing takes a certain amount of thinking and a certain amount of doing. To accomplish a big thing takes a certain amount of people thinking and a certain amount of people doing. It can range from, you know, 1 or 2 to 1 or 2 million. It's completely a variable topic. And the youth, not just the youth you're talking about, but for youth for quite some time, have been being sold a bill of goods of, you just go to school for 4 years and you can be the thinker and somebody else will be the doer. So you'll do the thinking and they'll do the doing and it'll all be good and you'll make out well. And then they were figuring out that robots were going to make the doers obsolete, so the thinkers could just think and the robots would do the doing and everybody would be happy. But it turns out the robots turned into AI and it's the thinkers that are becoming obsolete. You have to have doers. You have to have doers. Somebody has to go and cut into your pipe and fix the clog and put it back together again. And it's unlikely that robots are going to do that anytime soon and many other tasks. And that's simple, those simple realities are being ignored by people making decisions. I go on and on with them. I had to chime in the conversation. Thanks, Roy. KD2VHD.
You're welcome, Jim. Well, the problem is that it's wrong on both sides. The artificial intelligence, unless or until they find a completely different mechanism to do it, is not going to be able to do any creative thought. So they're always going to be somewhat limited. In the same way that, you know, you talk again to lunatics like Elon, and he'll tell you that there will be, in a year or two, there'll be humanoid robots that are able to give you brain surgery, which he's completely wrong with. So it's both sides. But, you know, I mean, everyone's sort of trying to get around and game the system. Again, that's part of human nature as well. Hopefully people wake up early enough to figure out that they have to somehow survive all the promises that people BS them about. Because a lot of this is all just rip. This is a method of people. There are people, loads of people out there trying to take other people's money, and they're lying to everyone. So, you know, if you don't figure that out early, then you're in real trouble. But, you know, there's no simple solution to things. You need thinkers, you need doers, you need motivators. You need all kinds of, you know, complex societies require all kinds of different skill sets to get to the whole nature of society working correctly. And a lot of times we get them wrong.
Comment?
Yeah, Brian?
W1WR. Well, AI has already taken the movie industry actors out,
you're going to be starting losing jobs with AI. And I'm afraid of AI. We all probably watched the movie War Games, a computer that was able to think. Terminator, a robot there, an iRobot there. So I'm afraid of that. And if we all watch science fiction movies, eventually those things turn true. Look at Dick Tracy and now the iPhone watch there. So yeah, it's a scary situation there. So and I said it just, yeah, well, I don't think I'll be around when that all switches around. But my father probably turned around and says, you know, I grew up in the 60s and the 70s, you know, and he says, I talked about your kids there, but he will look at them and just scratch his head and shake them there. And yeah, the smartphones, smart driving, smart stuff is just dumb people. So I'm a first responder, and I wish I could get a law passed. If you're in your car, you can't talk on your cell phone. You can't touch that dashboard display there and get distracted there. There's been many times I had to jump over a guardrail on scenes because of the distracted driver, even on a local road, getting hit or even getting rear-ended. Take a look around as you look up in your rearview mirror and you're coming to a stoplight and traffic stop. Look in your mirror. Look at how just about everyone is looking down in their phone as they're coming up behind you and you're wondering if they're going to stop. Look at everybody that stops. Stand on the sidewalk at a stoplight or a stop sign. And look, first thing they do is look at their cell phone. Now we got a system down here, and many towns have. You can go in a crosswalk, but they're giving the motor vehicles, after a couple of seconds, the right to turn into that crosswalk. But they got signs here, caution. 99% of the time I see somebody at a stoplight, that somebody's going to be walking in the crosswalk looking at their cell phone. All of a sudden, the light turns green. They don't even notice that person in that crosswalk, and they go because the light turned green. We have many fatalities of people injured here in surrounding towns because of that. So I think the cell phone was a nice thing there, but I think it's a dangerous thing. It's probably killing just as much people as drunk drivers now.
Yeah, it certainly has complicated life. Thank you very much. Thanks to everyone. I think we're going to table this for now. If you want to bring it up next Sunday night, I'm more than happy to do so. But we've kind of left Wesley in the background there. So once again, thanks to everyone who picked up the subject and ran with it. Wesley, are you out there?
Can I make a last final comment?
Okay.
All right, thank you for running the net there. And I think I was in the one other time. It wasn't all radio. And the discussions that's going on there, and not a real into a political thing there, but just normal things that are going on through the days in life there. And I was very happy and interesting subject and just tech there. And I try not to get involved in politics too much here. So, but again, thank you for running the net. 7 threes, everyone. Enjoy the rest of the week. We got thunderstorms coming up there, so rains, but temperatures are going to be up. WNWR.
Okay, very good. Always a pleasure. Hopefully.
KG2RY.
KD2REK. Appreciate all you do as always. Thanks so much for hosting. Big 73.
73 there. Thank you for attending and participating. I don't know what, I guess, unfortunately, Wesley thought, you know, we had forgotten him and left. So easy. Maybe next Sunday he'll return to discuss. He had a lot of topics to discuss. I thought we were going to just kind of get to a few of them towards the end of this particular TechNet, but he's left out. He's not on the Echo link, and he's not responding. Anyone has any other comments on this particular line we were discussing? We, you know, we have about 6 minutes before the SafeNet report if you want it. Otherwise, we'll go to the poll early, but give you people a chance if you want to pick up some aspect of the conversation for a little while longer.
KG2RY.
Again, there's a lot of noise on the repeater. I could hear David, but there was another person. Who's the other person?
Donald Wesley.
Oh, okay. Wesley, are you out there?
Yes, I am, but 4 minutes is not enough time for me to run 8 objects. So thank you very much. See you next time.
Okay, understood. David, what did you want to say? David, did you want to say something? Okay, nothing heard. Anyone want to make any comment before we move on to the SpaceNet report? Give it one more try. If anyone has any comments, want to finish up a thought that they had earlier or what have you before we move on to the SpaceNet report, now's the time.
KD2VHD.
Yes, Jim.
I figured I'd drop this thought. This whole topic about the work, college, youth, and all those related things, you know, college debt, skills training. Mike Rowe, who did the TV show Dirty Jobs, does a really good job digging into that whole topic. If anybody seems to have some interest in it, which it seems like there is, look up Mike Rowe, and there's a lot of work in that sphere. He's got some really good thoughts that he shares. And that is all. Thanks, Roy.
Okay, very good. I'll take a look and see what happens. Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of philosophies of education that everyone needs a bachelor's degree that finishes you, and there's stupid subjects that you could major in where there's no chance of making a living on. Some people just are not built for academics, and there's nothing particularly wrong with that. Problem is that, people, err all over the place. They decide that they want to have a PhD in philosophy. Well, you know, that's all well and good. It sounds very nice, but, you know, if you can't fill the a job that requires, you're now an unemployed doctor of philosophy. Part of education, unfortunately, for those daydreamers, means that you got to find some training to make money for the rest of your life and to grow your family. And, some people just prefer just to kind of dream their little dream. So I'll take a look and see what he has to say. You know, I particularly dislike these tech pros who have doctoral degrees, but they tell innocent younger kids to drop out of Harvard and Yale and Princeton and MIT just because they have a theory that needs to be proved. So there's more than a few tech pros. Some of them actually did what they said. You know, the guy who gave us Facebook, he quit Harvard after a year or so. Bill Gates quit Harvard. So some people get away with it, but a lot of people don't. And you don't hear their stories as they're busy at a Burger King someplace. Anyway, it's been a nice a technical net. I hope everyone enjoyed themselves. I hope you learned a few things, and I hope if you possibly can, you'll try to join us next Sunday night when we try and do this all over again. It's now 10:16 by my reckoning, and time for full WSON with the SpaceNet report.
D2GS to report for the TechNet report. Rusk behind the NASA crawler, you know, that brings now brings the SLS moon rocket from the VAV building, the vehicle assembled building, all the way to the launch pad. And years before that, it just bring the shuttle, and even before that, it brought the Saturn V rocket, from the vehicle assembly building all the way to the launch pad. And he did a great show. I mean, he got inside of it. He talked to all the workers and, you know, all the grease and stuffings that are involved. And I believe it was they were gas-fired system, diesel-fired system, and they would run generators. The generators would run the motors. Really, really quite good. Yeah, he's pretty good. Anyway, let me just drop it and see if anybody has any comments before we get into the main part of the space network.
Good evening, Paul. It's Brian.
Brian, do you have any topics you want to continue on? I don't have that many topics, but of course, there is one big one.
Well, I guess the one that's your thing going off is a New Glenn barbecue.
That's a little early for the 4th of July, but, you know, if you look close, you can see these sky rockets. They're tanks that maybe 6,000 different parts, and when something blows up, they come flying out, so you can see them flying away from the rocket. And what we're talking about is a New Glenn rocket that was brought out to the launch pad about a week or so ago, and they wanted to do test of all the engines, CE4 engines, liquid natural gas, LNG, and liquid oxygen. And what a lot of the companies do before they actually launch is they run a test. They have these things literally bolted down to the launch pad where the rocket can't go anywhere. They light off the engines for a period of time, usually, you know, have maybe 6 seconds or 10 seconds or so. So, you know, he did exactly that. You know, it was about, I think, 9 o'clock at night, Thursday night, so it was nighttime after that. and you know, the engine's fine. I heard some preliminary story that maybe one of the engines, maybe one of the pipes broke. But we'll see. You know, that's preliminary. But something happened seriously where the you see the fire, the explosion started from down below and then went up high, and then it was a big loud pop noise. And I think that would be probably the liquid hydrogen tanks and the liquid oxygen tanks on the top, on the second stage. You know, in some cases, rocket companies would just test the first stage without having a second stage attached. But this thing, he had the second stage attached. They wanted to see how everything works with, you know, complete load on the vehicle, you know, compression from all the weight and everything. And they've done this before. They've launched and landed three other times. This time, fourth time, didn't go so well. First, second stage. And they had the fairings attached, satellites on 42 satellites, and the satellites were from Amazon. They were going to be broadband satellites. They launched hundreds of these things. I think there's a little over 300 of them up there now with different rockets. This would have been the first time using the new blend to do that job. Their goal is to eventually 3,200 satellites in the new orbit, a broadband system. So the satellites were not there. They were still, you know, back somewhere else. Eventually, they would have brought them out later in the week, and they would have attached them to the upper part of the rocket with its fairings. You know, the temporary fairings that were up there would be separated, and then they would be able to launch. But they never got that far. They really took out the whole launch complex. Two gigantic towers that are there, one of them completely came down. The other tower is severely damaged. It's all buckled underneath. Very precarious situation where, I don't know, it looks like they have to be careful that this thing does fall over. I mean, they have a lot of work to fix this. All the concrete and everything, I'm sure, is all destroyed. It took them years and years to build up Launch Complex 36. NASA turning it, well, I don't know, probably 8 years ago or so. So it took all this time to, you know, to build this thing up. It's very, very good for three launches. Not that much damage for the other, you know, the other three launches. It was going to be a reusable launch complex. They don't have another one. They don't have, you know, there is a Launch Complex 36A and B, but they were not using the other one. They do have plans of actually building another one in the future, long-term plans. But this, you know, this was their one and only. And, you know, my guess, looking at it, I want to say it's going to take them a year to rebuild it. I've heard before, naturally. I know when you read the news, it could be anywhere, a year and a half or 2 years. But we'll see. They have a lot of money to go ahead and do what they got to do. So I'm too keep an eye on for future landings to occur on the moon. It's important Jeff Bezos for that and for the Amazon satellite system. Try to get, you know, over to easy. Other launches they launched their LEO satellites. But now they're, you know, any comments?
KB2VHD, Jim. Yeah, I have one question.
Very good, Jim. And by the way, that was a good comment about Roe. I've seen that guy. I've seen a lot of his.
He's got some terrific insight and touched a lot of people. Learn from them in certain situations. But this is slightly comedic, but also somewhat serious. Who has blown up more rockets, Elon or Jeff?
Oh, yeah, well, it's got to be by far. Yeah, he's got the new, you know, Bezos has the new Shepard system, which he's launched almost 100 people into suborbital space with that. He's blown up one in the early days before they actually put people on it, you know, testing it. You know, that's a reusable first stage. Actually, there isn't a second stage. The crew capsule gets pushed off from that first stage and come back with parachutes. I think about 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, they launched an unmanned New Shepard, and that thing went up. They had a problem with booster. The capsule separated and came back safely to land. They had, you know, different experiments on board that had nothing to do with people. But the booster itself, they lost that. He's lost those two, and now he's lost the New Glenn. Elon, I lost count. You know, he had many Falcon 9s blow up in the beginning. Right from them, actually, even before that, the Falcon 1, they called it. He launched from some island. I forget the name of the island, but out of the Pacific. They launched three rockets when he was first starting out, and every one was a failure. And then the fourth one, they said he had the rest of his money poured into that. If that didn't work, that would have been it. Because that one made it to orbit, he wound up getting the contract to first big commercial, you know, company to do this kind of work. So that really worked out for him. Then when he came to the Falcon 9s, they used to come down and try to land him on the drone ship. And, It had to be a half a dozen drones that crashes on the drone ship, but they would all blow up. Some of them went entirely into the water. And then, you know, of course, he started now with the Starship, and his last one he launched was number 12, and that booster came back. That was supposed to come straight down and duplicate a vertical landing in the Gulf of Mexico. But it came down, flipped over and over again, completely out of control, and that hit the water and blew up. So, you know, he's had a couple of them blow up over the Turks, Caicos Island. All the parts came down, rained down onto the island. I think it was two of them. Elon's got to be by a long shot. Back to you, Jim.
Interesting. You seem to be pointing at a different thing, though. How many launch complexes has Elon taken out? How many launch complexes has Jeff taken out?
He's got one, and Elon has the one as well. 2016 it was, which is almost 10 years ago. He had he was going to launch satellite for Israel called the Axiom. Anyway, he was getting ready to launch that thing. Nobody near the launch site at the time. There was one of the COP tanks. Elon, I think the one that blew up, was that nitrogen or was it helium? One of those. Anyway, highly compressed, and that thing leaked and wound up overpressurizing the oxygen tank, I believe. And that was on the launch complex. And that blew up. Launch complex 40. Launch complex 40. NASA gave him launch complex 40-39A. He completely wiped out that complex. See, now he had the second launch complex. You know, he right away he was able to, you know, launch from 39A, Florida. He also had Vandenberg. I think the story goes too, after that explosion almost 10 years ago, he was able to launch another Falcon 9 from Vandenberg, where Jeff Bezos is out of business temporarily until he can get this one rebuilt. He's in big trouble. He put everything he had into one launch complex. Thank you, Jeff.
I suppose it may be a petty sounding way of looking at things, but the statistics you're putting out are at least as interesting as baseball statistics, how many runs and hits and errors. I think it's an interesting, I don't say game of numbers, but get my point. Thanks for the comeback on those. Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah, and over the years, you know, as these happened, we covered them on the net. And then there was another one that Elon launched, and it was heading up, up to space. I think it got maybe 30 seconds up or so. And it was an L bracket made of aluminum inside the upper stage, and that broke loose from stress, and that in turn broke loose. I think that had one of these tanks or something that wound up moving, and that caused a similar problem, overpressurization, and that blew not near the launch complex, but on the way uphill. But they've all now had their problems, and the other companies too have had problems. Rocket Lab is doing good. I don't think that they ever had a problem on their launches. Atlas V, I mean, that thing's really a workhorse. Atlas V by ULA, United Launch Alliance, every one is a success, and I think they're up to 100 so launches. So that's a winner. The Vulcan rockets have launched three times, and they bought their engines from Jeff Bezos. They're running the same engine that just blew up, the BE-4 engines. They run two of them on the new Vulcan rocket. Now they're going to look to what really causes this explosion. Is it, the BE-4 engines? On the first stage of New Glenn, they have seven. On the first stage of Vulcan, they have two. If it's one of those, if they trace back to that, they could wind up rounding the Vulcan rocket for a while.
If any of you running, highly directed bombs, sometimes they get less directed than they do what they do. They bomb. Wow. And I'm getting to realize how much hardware we've thrown up in the sky. Amazing stuff. Back to you.
And it's more amazing than what's coming. Elon has launched 500 rockets. I think he's close to 600 of these Falcon 9 things. And he's put 10,200 satellites into orbit now, something like that. And every one of his flights, he's launching, maybe 50 at a time. At one point now he's launching the bigger ones. I think they're around 27 satellites at a time. But to get to 10,000, that's a lot of launches. All those second stages that are coming down, first stage is fine. They come back down and they're reused. They land on a barge or they actually land back on land, either in California or in Florida. But the second stage, they're good-sized pieces of equipment. Everyone, after letting the payload go at 17,500 miles an hour, those second stages have to turn around, fire their engines again, and deorbit. And most of the time, they have to purposely crash in the South Pacific. But they could go anywhere, into the Atlantic, Indian Ocean. And all this junk is coming down. All right, fine, it's not hitting the land, but hitting the deep blue sea.
So a fair amount of litter amongst the working stuff. A lot more traffic up there than I realized.
The beginning of New Glenn was called the Javits Program, which originally he wanted to have the second stage be reusable as well. You know, the first stage, this one that blew up, those first stages are designed to be reusable. So far, he's launched three times. The first time, out of the gate, it was a successful flight because he got the test payload into orbit with the second stage. The first stage was supposed to land on a barge. It didn't make it, but it got close, a couple of miles high, but it was doing the right thing. It just ran out of fuel, they said. The second and third flight, both first stages successfully landed on the barge. Jacqueline named it after his mother. Barge floats around 400 miles outside, out in the Atlantic. First stage come down, land, they bring it back, they're able to reuse it. In fact, that's what they did with the first stage. They rebuilt it and they relaunched it. This one that blew up was never flew yet. It was a brand new one that they brought out to launch Complex 36. And it never made it off the launch pad. The second stage of all these flights, if Jeff Bezos stuck to his original plan called the Javits Program, those things would have been coming through the atmosphere with heat shields and coming back and eventually landing on land. He still has long-term plans of doing that, without a doubt, probably many, many years from now. There are some companies that are trying to do exactly that right from the start. The Rocket Lab company by Jeff Bezos, Peter Beck is his name. Now he's a billionaire. Originally, he wasn't when he came out with the Electron rocket, which is launched probably 60 or 70 times now. That Electron rocket, he was going to make that reusable, but he gave up on that idea. He wanted to catch it with a helicopter, and he tried a couple of times, but he gave up. It's a relatively small, light thrust rocket. He could put maybe up to 1,000 pounds to orbit. Actually, I think the number is around 600-700 pounds. Give you an idea, these other big rockets could launch, 30, 40 tons into space. Peter Beck's happy with, 600, 800 pounds for the Electron rocket. Well, he's building the next version, and that's called the Neutron rocket. And Neutron is being multi-built in near Virginia. The launch complex is in Virginia. Neutron's going to be a medium vehicle. It's going to be a good-sized vehicle. I mean, long-term goal, you could actually put a crew on board. You're not going to launch 50 satellites at one time, heavy satellites. But, it's good-sized rockets, and they have their own engines they're building, called the Archimedes engines. The plan for this vehicle, I know I've talked about this on the net before, is they plan on launching it from Virginia. It looks like one big solid rocket. It doesn't even look like it has a second stage. Well, when it gets up into orbit, the first stage, the whole rocket stays in orbit. It doesn't separate. There was no first stage that separates. Now, imagine this thing in orbit, and the front bearing, instead of separating and floating back down to Earth, Elon Musk, by the way, he saves his bearings. They come back down on parachutes and reuses them. This guy, Peter Beck, has the bearings that are going to open up in the front. It's got that kind of a look. It's going to open up, going to slit. His original design was going to slit into like four pieces and then reclose. They changed that design, and now it's just pieces of two halves that open up. And after they open up, the so-called second stage will come out from inside with payload on board. And at that stage, we'll push that payload into orbit. The bearings then will close, And now it looks like one big rocket again. And that's going to deorbit and come back all the way to, he's got a landing barge as well. Eventually someday he'll land on land. But that's his design. So then you have a complete system. Elon Musk is trying to do that with his upper stage, which he calls, you have the heavy booster, and that's designed to be caught when it comes down. And then the ship itself is designed to come down and also be caught by the arms when it comes down. But nowhere near doing that yet. But there is one other company, and I really like this company. It's called Stoke. Stoke is developing, they have their main booster, he's calling that a Nova booster. Nova booster will launch the second stage to orbit. Nova booster will come back and again land on land. Well, it's designed to come back with the atmosphere and land, which will stay low into space, and then come down through the atmosphere. It's got a heat shield. They call it an active heat shield. Most heat shields, as far as I know, all the heat shields are ablative system. They come through the atmosphere. The bottom of it is coated, and eventually that coating gets burnt off and flies off space. As that's flying off space, they can take the heat with it, a little particle, and heat the space. Stoke has a different system, this active heat shield. Imagine it coming through the atmosphere, heat shield. Now, they're not going to use the parachute. What they have is these propulsive thrust is looking down at 30 of them on the circumference of the vehicle. Controlled by one engine. There's going to be one engine inside the second stage. Big engine that's sending fuel and oxygen out to all 30 of these thrusts on the circumference of the vehicle. The computer will control each one. This way, come down, you know, the angle that they want, and eventually land straight down. You know, burn up does not have this coating on it. It's not designed to be ablative. It's active. As these rockets are firing, 30 thrusts eventually slow down to eventually land. It's running on liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. The liquid hydrogen, you know, so-called at minus 400 something. The piping runs all through the heat shield. It's actually being cooling the heat shield as it's coming down through the atmosphere. I've seen an interview with Interpair, company owner, and they believe that right after it lands, you could actually walk over to it and touch that heat shield. It won't be hot. So I think that's a real cool design. Now, that will probably launch sometime in 2027. This other one by Rocket Lab, the Neutron, they said they want to launch by the end of the year, probably the spring of next year. I mean, they still have goals launching at the end of the year. A lot of companies to watch. There's another one called Relativity. They're well on the way to testing. I think they will be able to test by the end of the year. They're in good shape. Another, I'd say, medium weight rocket company. Unfortunately, they're second stage, originally designed to come back, and are doing that for now. But the booster will come back. So we have a lot of companies to watch and see how things go. Firefly is still doing good. Firefly has plans of launching missions to the moon. We'll see. We'll try to keep an active. Idea of what's going on with all these different rocket companies trying to get things off planet Earth. Any comments? WS2N.
Hello there, HG2RY.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
Good. Cool. Can't complain. How are you?
Okay. Well, the weather cooled off for a while. It's okay to love the heat, but I don't. Back to you, Dave.
I don't love the heat. I don't love when it's really cold, you know. I guess I like something in the middle. Anyway, I do have a question for you. Yeah, they were talking about space mission to Mars. Space mission to Mars. What is the time frame and the possibility for that?
You're talking about little manned missions to Mars, I assume. You know, I mean, we've been on the planet with a small particles as big as the microwave. America's had four rovers on the planet since. But a manned mission, I guess you're the person going to actually on the planet, or maybe back.
I think you're breaking up on the all-star side. I got most of that. My question is, you know, they're talking about colonizing Mars. Colonizing Mars for a number of different things.
You're on all-star. Okay. Old, you know, from way back, and it seems like decades now. And, you know, to see some kind of a city on Mars, I don't think Elon's going to live that long. But, you know, I don't have any long-term hope of that. Right now the goal is to get to the moon, and they're having trouble getting to orbit. And when I say they, I mean Elon Musk. His last rocket, Starship number 12, got off the ground. One of the engines, he had 30 engines on the first stage, quit. They have to figure out why that happened. The first stage came tumbling down and crashed into the Atlantic Ocean. FAA is now grounded Starship. So now Starship's grounded, New Glenn. Well, they're not going anywhere anytime soon because of the explosion. So we're left with a heavy lift rocket. We could use the Atlas V, which actually just went off 2 days ago. Atlas V, even with Jeff Bezos' problem with all the satellites, you know, he never got a chance to put his 40-some-odd satellites up on that latest launch that blew up. He already had a contract with Atlas V to put 29 on Atlas V. Atlas V has two big, they still use these Russian engines, these RS-180 engines, and they have solid booster rockets that are attached to them, and they could have up to five of them. You know, that's the biggest number that could be attached to the Atlas V. They call it, when they launch it, it's called the 551. I mean, five for the fairing is going to be 5 meters diameter, the other five is five boosters, and then the one is for second stage. They have one engine on the second stage. And that put satellites up for Jeff Bezos. So, you know, right now they're concentrating on Earth orbit for all these thousands of satellites, and then they're concentrating on getting back to the moon. Mars, I don't see that happening for, you know, and when they go, you know, to actually land on the moon, minimum, maybe 10, 15 years, I think. There is one guy, I mentioned this, I think, last week, Sean, I think his last name is, comes from China. And he's already flown on a Falcon 9 rocket, got into a Dragon crew vehicle, and I think he paid his way to do it. He's a billionaire, and he had three other people with him, and he went over the pole. They launched Florida, and they went over the South Pole, North Pole, that kind of an orbit, and I think they did that for about 3 days or so, and then they came back and successfully landed. Now, this guy, he likes to go around the world in different places, weird places. That he wants, his goal is to go to every spot in the whole Earth, and he got nothing better to do, so he told me to deal with Elon. He wants to be on the first flight. As far as I know, it's only him, all the way to Mars. He wants to have, when the Starship is up and running, and they decide, well, it's good enough to launch people, he wants to be the guy on that Starship, but it still won't be ready to land on Mars, so he wants to be doing a bypass. He's going to go right near Mars, not touch the surface, keep going all the way around the sun, and he's going to come back to Earth and land. This whole process will take, what, about 6-7 months to get to Mars, and who knows how long, I don't know, a year and a half or something to get back. So this is like an over a two-year mission for this guy. And, you know, right before Elon launched, so he was supposed to be Starship number 12. You know, by the way, that right before he announced it, they scrubbed the mission. It wasn't working out. But eventually that mission did get off the ground. I told you before what happened. It boosted it. It didn't operate properly. Now the FAA has grounded the Starship into the future. But right before that was going to launch, this guy gets on from all places, Bobay Island. I remember Bobay Island. That's like south of, like, tip of Africa, halfway between Africa and Antarctica. You remember Bobay Island? I think it was three wide. I think rather he was qualified for one of the expeditions that were there. He's standing there and making this transmission saying that he's going to be the first one to go to Mars. And, you know, SpaceX put it on, you know, like breaking news, and it's all pipe dreams. Anyway, that was up there. Back to you, Dave. I just wanted to tell you that story. This guy, by the way, he was on Bobay Island. Why couldn't he have taken some of his money, billions of dollars, and you know, paid for maybe an expedition to go over there with me? He got there on the planes, and then he to get to the island itself, they flew him in a big helicopter.
Time complete.
You know, bring the expedition group or something. Back to you, Dave.
WS2N from KG2RY. Very interesting story, Paul, and quite fantastic. I would say, first of all, that I don't have so much money, so I guess I'm not going anywhere so fast, especially to leave this planet. Maybe I can go on vacation somewhere not too far away. Anyway, I do have a question regarding space travel, and data colony. Either data colony on the moon, data center on the moon, data center on Mars, data center in satellite. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I know. Well, Roy talked about this quite a bit on previous nets, about the possibilities of putting data satellites into orbit or onto the moon. And I feel like he does, you're gonna have to wait a long time before that happens. We talked about the possibilities of going in and the infrastructure that would be involved and the hundreds of millions of pounds, countless hundreds of millions of pounds of equipment that would have to be, you know, either put into orbit or onto the moon. And the logistics behind it is prohibitive. It's not going to happen anytime soon. You have to power these things. And, just have one, I think I said this last week too, just have 1 gigawatt of power to run, let's say, that data center, let's say, in orbit. You would need solar panels that are roughly 2 miles by 2 miles in orbit to get that 1 gigawatt system running. You know, Elon wants to put up, what is it, 1,000 gigawatt system. That's what he needs. So you would need, like, solar panels, maybe to... I guess it maybe the size of Rhode Island. It just took a while, I guess. It's maybe the size of Connecticut. I don't know. How are you going to power these things? You know, you're going to put nukes up there while you're at it? I don't know. So this is what he wants to do. I don't see that happening.
Well, I tell you, honestly, it sounds crazy, but I have no need for any of this, I have to say. And to say it happened, I hope, you know, it doesn't affect too many people, and I hope that it's not too damaging.
Yeah, and to get that going, he would have to have the launching, you know, 10 times a day. I don't help investors or something. It's a great story. When you look at the logistics behind, you know, some of this stuff, it's pretty far-fetched, you know. But we'll see. I'll just be happy to, I'm going to say, to get ham radio station on the moon. That would be great. And the second I saw this explosion, well, I saw it that morning, you know, when it was on the news, I saw this whole rocket blow up. First thing that crossed my mind is, I'm not going to get any QSL cards from the moon anytime soon. So I'm looking at the time. Wow. 11:02. I have a couple of other topics. We'll cover them next week. This is the one we had covered. This is really going to be the space program. Unfortunately, it's going to delay it quite a bit. I just don't know how long. I don't know what they're going to do. There's going to be a lot of changes that have to be made. We'll see. Any last comments before I turn it back to Roy? WS2N.
KD2BHD.
No, thank you, Paul. Thanks for the discussion. And I got a lot of good information for this. Thank you and have a great evening. WS2N from KG2RY. Good night.
2RY, WS173, and we'll catch you next time around. And yeah, it makes good reading too, you know. Go through the all the different websites. Fascinating. Jim, I heard you. Back to you.
This probably segues off your topic a bit, but I think I just made a decision listening to the data center stuff one more time. The fact that you can pick this thing out of your pocket and get access to most of the world data in an instant is quite amazing. The instantaneous need to have these mega, incredibly huge data centers everywhere, up in space, down on the ground, in every county, every city, in every state, in every municipality. Like, what is the data that we don't have access to that we need to have available? Nobody's talking about that. What is this data? What data? I think I know the answer to this, and I think you do too. Often the data center things get talked about, no mention of what is the data. It's a troubling situation. I think I will no longer let the conversation go by about the topic without trying to address what is this data that they are so eager to have, to keep, to store, to access, to monitor, to evaluate, to monetize, all that stuff. Anyway, sorry for the segue. Good job, Paul. 73.
Agree. I think of the same thing. What do we need, you know, half a city up there with what? I don't know. I get on my tablet and I ask a question. The thing comes up in the AI mode and answers all kinds of great questions, you know. Whether it's right or not, you know, I'm not sure. But when I ask a space question that I know it's right and it gets right, it gets it right. That's pretty cool. You know? What do I need a city now? I mean, it's working. It works fine. And if it gets out of control.